The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep your love. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne, a lyrical analysis of Kanye West. My name's Chris Lambert, and today we're doing a story with Tyler. Tyler, why don't you introduce yourself to everybody?
What's up, everybody? What's up, man? I'm excited to be on this. I am Tyler Barstow. I am one of the co-founders of Vinyl Me Please, and I am a massive Kanye stan.
Which is always a good thing to discover about somebody, because you hear about, like, I had heard about Vinyl Me Please. Obviously, it was everywhere at one point in time. And then to find out, like, oh, Kanye fan? Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm about to turn 30 in January, and I think I've spent probably most of my 20s not going more than a couple days or a week tweeting something about Kanye. Like, it's probably pathetic if I went back through all of it, just like... But man, yeah, it's been my love for Kanye has been around for a while at this point. It goes deep.
It's a funny point to reach, because I remember being a kid and seeing my parents get really excited about celebrities or really sad about celebrity deaths. And mm-hmm. I remember thinking, like, how silly is that you can, like, care so much about somebody that you had never met or a celebrity like that. Granted, I was like in a grouchy 11-year-old at the time.
Yeah.
But totally. Now, yeah, that same thing. You, like, hit your 20s and you're just like, wow, this person's work has been so meaningful for not just a year of my life, not just a couple years, but, like, my life.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's like you... And Kanye's been around long enough that, like, we sort of grew up with him. I mean, I think his first record dropped when I was 15. I remember, like, I was in my friend's, it was funny. I grew up in, like, a really conservative family. And I remember I had a buddy who was, like, later in high school, he might've been, like, a senior, and I was, like, in eighth grade or a freshman when College Dropout came out. And, I remember I was riding in his car somewhere after church. Like, we were going to meet some people for lunch or something. And, like, Jesus Walks came on the radio. And I was like, dude, I have never heard anything like this before. And part of that is because it's just, I wasn't listening to great music at the time. I mean, I'm not saying it, but when I heard it, I was like, holy shit. Like, what is that song? And he's like, yo, this is Kanye West. He's going to be huge. And my buddy was right.
Yeah, your friend knew what was going down.
Yeah, totally.
Because, I mean, totally. We hear so many singles by various artists where you're just like, oh, that was a really good single. But you don't necessarily think, like, oh, that person's going to be the next big thing.
Yeah, like, I honestly, I know that there's, like, a decent number of connections between them at this point. But that hasn't happened many times. I remember when I heard Royals by Lorde. And I was like, I felt similarly. I was like, Lorde is going to be huge. Like, it just felt like there was some kind of energy in her that it kind of was a similar experience. But that doesn't happen very much. And that makes sense. Generational artists, there's a reason that it's like everybody has a decent sort of catalog in their mind of who they are, because they don't come around very much. Like, you know, people that are going to define a section of music or music in general, like, there just aren't that many Michael Jacksons or Princes running around, or Madonnas, you know what I mean? Like, and that's great. It's just funny. Like it was that same feeling that I would imagine the same feeling that somebody probably felt when they heard Michael Jackson for the first time. Like, can you imagine like the first time, like hearing Thriller and or just being like, what is that? You know what? Anyway, yeah. So yeah.
It just, it leaves you really, I don't know, thrilled in a way. What else is this person going to produce? Which,
right.
That's probably what's so startling about Kanye's discography, is that it wasn't just the one or two albums and like had that peak, but we're coming up on 13 years of just not a false step when it comes to an album.
Yeah. No, I know. Which is, I mean, I don't think that's ever happened. Like, I can't think of another artist like ever who didn't put out who never put out like a mediocre or bad album.
And I think people make arguments that some of Kanye's albums, like, you know, when 808s came out, people are like, oh, this is Kanye's down album. When Yeezys right. came out, they're like, this is Kanye's down album.
Right.
But then in hindsight, as the years go on, those albums just become more and more appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I think, like, I remember that. I mean, dude, it took me a long time to get into 808s. Actually, I didn't get into it until a couple years later. This girl that I was dating at the time, like, we had been kind of, like, almost dating for a while and been, like, just talking a bunch and were great friends and stuff. And I remember she told me, she was like, yeah, well, when there was like 6 months or something that we weren't talking and whatever. And she was like, yeah, all winter I listened to 808s and Heartbreak. And and I was like, man, I never got into that record. And so I listened to it again. And then I got really into it. But you can look back and like 808s and Heartbreak is an album that like, by the way, am I allowed to cuss on this show?
Yeah, please.
Okay, cool.
As much as you want.
Yeah, my show, when people ask, I'm like, the only requirement is that you have to at some point. I think there's only like one person maybe who hasn't ever, but it's just, anyway, I just wanted to check. You look back and like 808s and Heartbreak, like there's a whole segment of music that was kind of spawned because of that record. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of like, back and forth around the fact that Kanye kind of found that sound with Kid Cudi and then kind of shaped it into his own thing and whatever. And he's always really been good at that. But it was like, that was an album that I think a lot of times, and I try to be like, Kanye sort of, I think help like experiences like that with his music, I think have helped me a lot over the years of just like balancing my expectations of what I think of a record when I first hear it, because I've missed out on a lot of records like in the short term because I was like, oh, this isn't good, I don't like this. And then I go back to it years later and it's like, what the hell was I thinking? Like, what was wrong with me? Right. So yeah.
I've been a fool. It's kind of it's kind of flattering in a way, sad also in a way, to be the person that caused somebody else to listen to 808s and Heartbreak.
Yes. Like, totally, man. Or Yeezus. I mean, Yeezus is a great example. I mean, it's like, Yeezus is just one of those albums that like that's the best stadium rock record of the last decade, easily. I mean, it's like and it's crazy. Like, I saw that tour in Chicago, actually. I was still living there at the time. And I was like, man, I was at that show and I was like, I've never seen anything like this before. Like, I've been to a lot of concerts and I've never been to something that was like on every possible level, like overwhelming, like just everything about it. He had that mountain and there was like this guy in this sort of red demon creature costume who was like climbing all over the mountain. And like, there, you know, he had all these like, it was just crazy. Did you see that tour?
My forever like greatest disappointment in life will be that we had tickets, both Travis and I, to the Minnesota show or Minneapolis show, and the truck carrying all the equipment crashed.
And I remember that, and it like one of the screens got cracked or broken or something, right? And so
Yep, and they said they were going to reschedule it, and then they just eventually canceled it, so we never got to see it.
Man, that sucks. Dude, yeah, that's what happened with the Life of Pablo tour. He, like, had that meltdown, like, a week and a half before I was supposed to see him in Denver.
No.
Yeah, man, it was, like, it was a lot. I was, like, I'd been seeing all the videos, you know, like, I mean, the videos, like, when you played the Forum in L.A., and it just was, like, just crazy. And I had gone to the theater to see like the release thing at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. I went to a movie theater to watch it, and it was like, this is going to be the best concert of my life. And I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me, dude. just get some sleep, like drink some water, and like cut this shit out, because I've been waiting to see this show for like a year now, or like 7 months. So that was the beginning of, yeah, that was like, I needed that concert, and it didn't happen. Which, it's like, it's not about me, but I was just like, fuck, man. Like, I just need this right now. So anyway.
Yeah, like, this was going to be the, not just the highlight of the year, this was going to be something that just, my life needed as a cornerstone. Yes,
totally, man. Which might be pathetic, but it's just true. So yeah. Yeah. Man,
hopefully we get this. We get the rumors of the tour starting back up are true, and you get to go.
Yeah, man, and I cannot explain how happy I am to hear that Kid Cudi is helping produce this new record.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, did you see the Mike Dean tweet yesterday?
Yeah, where he said it feels like this reminds me of the last couple days of mixing Watch the Throne or something.
Yeah.
Yep, it's going to be big, man, big time.
Oh my goodness!
Mike Dean is a legend. I mean,
he is. He's incredible. All the work that he's done on those albums, it's they wouldn't be the same without him.
Yeah, man. I mean, like I remember he wrote Ultralight Beam, or at least he came up with like the first like the chord progression for it, and like I think they interviewed him or they interviewed Chance or somebody about that song, and they were. Whoever it was like, yeah, Mike Dean, that song happened. Like Mike Dean was just kind of like fucking around in the in the studio and just came up with this chord progression just during some downtime. And Kanye was like, yo, that's dope. And then out of that came Ultralight Beam, which is an incredible. I mean, it's one of my favorite Kanye songs. It's amazing. So anyway, it's just I love that. I love Mike Dean. I don't know that much about him. I just like I've never met him, but. I love him. For someone I've never met, I love him.
I was so angry at him in the 4 days between the Madison Square Garden show and the Life of Pablo actually dropping, because he kept doing Periscope live videos of them working on the album, and he would just kind of like troll people thinking that it was about to come out, that we were going to get a sample of something. And then just wouldn't give us any information. And he was getting such a kick out of it.
Yep. No, totally. And I remember watching that Madison Square Garden show and being like, holy shit, Future's on this song. Like, this is the best Future's. Like, I love Future, but I was like, this is like one of the best hooks that Future's ever done. And then found out that it's not Future, it's Designer. He's just, which is like an incredible marketing ploy on Kanye's part to get Designer out into the public consciousness and just be like, he started with that like that Metro Boomin hook at the beginning that is Future, and then it goes into this thing and it's this guy that sounds a lot like Future. I'm like, I could see that this could be Future, and then it was like definitely not Future. So yeah, but it was weird. I mean, did you see the Madison Square Garden thing? Like, did you watch it live?
Yeah, in the theater. And I remember when Ultralight Beam played for the first time, I was just gripping the armrest like, this is the thing that exists.
Yeah, same. I was like, I can't believe how good this song is. Like, I was tearing up. I was like, this is, I don't know. And Kanye, you know, for me, like, Kanye has a very like particular ability to like make stuff that, like, there's a lot of like very emotional, everybody has very emotional connections with artists that they love, right? And I think, like, for me, he's one of the few artists that has gotten me, like, to, like, cry. Not because I'm sad, but just because it's like overwhelmingly gorgeous, like these moments of music that just like take over your life. And Ultralight Beam was one of those. It was just like, I can't even describe. I was sitting there, I was like, I can't even describe how I feel right now. Like, I don't even know what the right word is. But yeah.
Because it's already amazing music just when you're listening with headphones on. But to be in a theater surrounded by other Kanye fans and to have the music playing at that volume and kind of just enveloping you in a dark room with the visuals that were there, that was something else.
Yeah. No, I know, man. And I thought like that, like those videos of like the video, like the live video of like him. I mean, it was just amazing. It was like him and like Kid Cudi was there. And like, I think Mike Dean was like all these people like right around him at the table there on the floor is like one of the, there's that picture of Kanye with his eyes closed and his hands up that I think, and it's like, for me, it's like such an iconic like music picture. Just like this moment of like just all these incredible artists like huddled around basically playing Pass the Aux Cord in Madison Square Garden, right? Like, I mean, like it was amazing. It was like one of the best, it felt like one of the best moments in music history, in modern music history, just because it was like, it had been true for a long time, but that was a moment for me. And even that picture of just like this concept of like rap is sort of the new rock, right? Like years ago, like Kanye ranting about like how like rappers are the new rock stars. And it's been like that for a minute, Hedy Slimane. like that, it was just that he was right then. But I think that moment was like, and it's like undeniably true in the public consciousness now. Like, and that was just, I don't know. So that, it just felt so insane. And so right. You know, everybody was like making fun of the like, or some of my friends are like making fun of the like fashion line stuff that was going on during that thing. And it's like, man, imagine like working as hard as Kanye's worked for as long as he has and going to one of the biggest like arena, like one of the most famous arenas on the planet and playing your new album and showing off your clothing line at the same time. Like that's like, That is a summit of one sort or another. That's like, for any creative, that's like peak. That's like that is one of the peaks, I think. And I was like really proud of him. And I'm proud of anybody that gets to that stage and is able to do that. Like, and I think like for him in particular, a guy that's on purpose sometimes and sometimes not, like has been so controversial. It just felt so good that like, even no matter what anybody thought about him, whatever opinions they had, it didn't matter. Like they like, and that's the funny thing too. Everybody, all these people, you know, there's a lot of criticism of him and he, you know, he deserves some of it for sure. But like there's all these criticism of him, but his shows are still always packed out. It's like, it's not like anybody's like, everybody still loves his music. So it's just an amazing, I was just really proud of him. You know, not that that matters to him, but I was just really proud of him that he was able to pull that off. Like that was just a really incredible moment, I think.
It says something too. So many people find his music inspirational. And then there's people that find him, like Kanye, the man himself, inspirational. And the fact that he did have this fashion dream, how many of us after doing the first fashion show and getting the reviews he got would have just been like, okay, never mind.
Yeah, this isn't my passion anymore.
Yeah, just,
totally.
Because that was a lot of shit he took for first fashion line, which I didn't think, I mean, my opinion on this is obviously like skewed, but I didn't think that first show was that dramatically bad as people were describing it. And
totally.
The fact that he went from that to being able to do Yeezy Season 3 on the scale that it was just, yeah, that's a moment that you have to be proud of somebody for, just as a human being going through everything.
Totally, and I think like, you know, I've never owned any of his clothing. I honestly, like, I think I'm not at a point in my life yet where like I feel like I'm cool enough to wear that. And I understand like on some point you got to kind of just will yourself to be. But the thing that I really loved about it is, like, I love the concept of, like, you know, basically clothes, and it's ironic because all this stuff is so expensive, but the concept of, like, affordable, almost like uniform-ish clothing, where, like, there isn't a label on it, and it's not like you just, it's just stuff to wear that looks good. And, like, the concept that in the future people will primarily wear sort of these, like, uniform type things is, I think, actually, like, really fascinating. I think the philosophy behind it of, like, how that's, like, a, sort of an equalizer, like design and clothing as sort of a great equalizer in a good way, I think is a pretty fascinating concept. And I've just never, nobody else has been saying that kind of stuff. And I think, like, I think his clothing, I think 20 years from now, like, people will look back and be like, man, like, that clothing, like, the sort of the glass ceiling that broke has now influenced a lot of the clothing that we do like, or we do wear, or whatever. Right. Like, I mean, it may take a while, but I think that's a concept that will set in for sure. And I think that, like, it's a really admirable one. I mean, I think that, like, regardless of whether he's the one designing the clothes that people are wearing in 20 years or not, he probably will be. But if not, like, I think people at least look back and be like, man, that actually was a lot better idea than we thought it was at the time, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And we already are seeing some of that impact. Like, you go into any H&M and you can definitely see, like, certain outfits where you're like, okay, that seems very Kanye-y.
Yep, totally. Yeah, and I think, like, an H&M is, and I think I remember Kanye a while ago wanted to be, I don't know if he still does, but I know he really wanted to be the creative director for Gap, because, like, he wanted Gap to be, like, kind of, I think, sort of what H&M is, which is, I mean, H&M, that's how they got big. It was like they made sort of fashion-ish clothing that was super cheap. Like, you could go in there and get a suit for, like, $100. You could get a button, like, a kind of a button down that looked kind of like sort of at least conscious of where fashion was at the moment for, like, $25 or whatever. And I think, like, that there'll be another one. H&M will probably be another one that, looking back, it'll be like, man, like, normalizing slightly better taste. And I don't wear H&M. I don't really shop there, but I think, like, I really love sort of I like that ethos. I'm sure there's a lot of reasons to not like H&M that I don't know about or haven't thought about, but I like that part of it for sure. And I think that's a really cool kind of vein, that I'm excited that he's continued to sort of, that he's continued to push forward or push, like, kind of push through. So.
Agreed. Well, jumping back a little bit, you mentioned hearing Jesus Walks as kind of the first Kanye song you had ever encountered. When did you first hear the album, College Dropout, in its entirety?
Years later, actually. I think when I heard that, like, I was, like, for the most part, only really allowed to listen to Christian music, like, go to Christian. I remember I would go to Christian bookstores and buy CDs. Like, that was the main place that I was allowed to go. And when I heard that song, like, I had, you know, I was also allowed to listen to, like, Linkin Park and, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, but, like, I just never, I had, like, the only rap stuff that I had was, like, burned CDs from my high school friends of, like, Busta Rhymes and Eminem and 50 Cent and whatever. And so that's, like, for me, for better or for worse, like, those artists are, like, were what I understood of rap for a long time. And I think, man, I think the first CD of his that I, cause I would just listen as I got older, like, I would just hear his stuff, right? Like, cause it was everywhere.
Yeah.
But I remember that I had never really listened to Late Registration. I kind of just missed out on that. And so I think the first full album of his that I owned was Graduation. Years later, when I was in college, I think I was a freshman in college when that came out, and I went and bought it at, like, a Best Buy or something. And I remember there was, like, I had some of my college friends, there was this girl that I had, like, dated in high school who just went to the neighboring school. And so we were just friends, and it was like a group of us. I remember I was driving with her and some of my other college buddies somewhere, and they were, she was just like, can you just turn that fucking CD off? That is the only thing that you ever play in your car. Like, she's like, I'm so fucking tired of that. Like, just get out of here with that. So I was listening to it that amount. Like, I was listening to it way more, but like, I was listening it to an amount that like everybody riding around in Tyler's Volvo freshman year of college, that's all they heard. And they got sick of it. And I just couldn't stop listening to it. So that was the first like full album that I heard from him. And then I went back and I got late registration. And then I went back and got College Dropout. So College Dropout, I think, was probably the third album of his that I heard, ironically. And I remember at the time, like, I don't know, like, I just didn't totally, I think College Dropout for a long time was like probably my least favorite of his records, which is weird for me to say now. But like, I mean, because I love it now, but I like looking back, I remember like that was the one that I went to the least. So
yeah, same. Even when we started this podcast back in July of 2015, which now starts to sound really old, but
yeah,
when we started the podcast, I think in our first episodes, we were joking that we didn't like listening to the College Dropout that much. And
yeah,
while we still, like, relative to other Kanye albums, like, we still love College Dropout in terms of other music, but it was just one of the ones, like, you know, why listen to College Dropout when you have My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy?
Yep.
And it took doing the full season of the College Dropout to really start to be like, man, I had some stupid opinions about this album. And still, I say that, but still, it's the one that I still think is the most basic version of Kanye. And I prefer the growing artistic temperament that he had rather than that intro. But I still look back on that album very nostalgically.
Yeah. No, and it's funny, when you have a podcast, the thing that sucks about having a podcast is that inevitably you have all sorts of bad takes along the way, and they're just out, they're just out there in the universe forever,
right? It's
like and the, that's happened a couple times to me, and I'm like, yeah, I guess I did say that, I don't even remember saying that, whatever it was, but yeah, I believe you, that's a really shitty music take, sorry. I don't stand by that anymore, but yeah, there's audio of it, so
all I can think of is Paul De Podesta for the Browns saying he didn't think Carson Wentz would be a top 20 quarterback.
Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah. Being a Browns fan.
It feels bad. It feels bad, man.
It really does. So what? Yeah. When you were first listening to Graduation, what was it that stuck out to you about that album? Because already you had had the experience with Jesus Walks where you're like, this doesn't sound like any of the music I've listened to, which at that time really didn't. At this point in college, you've probably been exploring a bit more music on your own and encountering this album. What were some of the songs that really jumped out to you? What was it about the album?
I think it was, man, like, yeah, at that point I'd been digesting like just a shitload of music. And I was at that time, like, the main stuff I was listening to was like Brand New or Thursday or like Taking Back Sunday or whatever. And I can remember like the concept of like basically like a kind of a highbrow like pop rap record like didn't even exist in my mind. And so I remember I remember that was like Everywhere, and then Stronger, and like I had listened a little bit to Daft Punk, and I was like, oh shit, he's working with Daft Punk now. How did that happen? And like, and that, it was like this sort of rap, like stadium, like maximalism. And it's just that I'd never heard before. And it was interesting because, I mean, like, you can look back and there's at least an argument to be made that Daft Punk was sort of the group that pushed electronic music into like a stadium setting. And like, for me, Graduation was an album And I'm not saying that this is canon by any stretch of the imagination, but like for me, it felt like this is the album that is pushing rap into a stadium setting. Like I had never thought of like going to kind of a rock concert setting and listen, like at a festival or whatever, and see, like listening to rap that like made sense in that setting. And that was the first time that it clicked. It was like, oh yeah, like this is a legitimate pop record, right? Like this is like a, but it's not pop. And that, so anyway, so it just really like, it kind of messed with me a lot in a good way. And I think it was, there's a lot on that. Like, cause like, Can't Tell Me Nothing's on that song, on that album. I think maybe not. No. Okay. And I still get the track list of Late Registration and Graduation, like mixed up sometimes, but it had that on there. It had, you know, something like Stronger. And then it had like, I think Hey Mama is on that.
Late Registration.
It has
Flashing Lights and Everything I Am,
yes,
The Glory.
Yes. Yeah. So, and like Everything I Am was like, actually I was just listening to it again the other day. I'd almost like forgotten about how much I loved that song, but that was like, there were so many different kinds of music on that album, but it all made sense together. And I was like, I don't know how this makes sense, but it does. And I'd like never heard, at that point, I had just never heard probably an album of any kind that changed styles so much, but fit together. And it felt almost like he sat, that was like the album that, even when I think back on it, like that was the first album where it felt like he made a really big breakthrough as like a curator of music and not just a great producer and rapper. Cause like the mind, like realizing that that his mind was capable of like assembling like a collage that was that diverse, was what I think when I first started getting like, that's what got me really, really into him. Cause it was like, damn, no, there's like not hardly anyone probably on the planet that can pull this off. Right.
Yeah. It's such an amazing ability to have that kind of diversity. And, you know, we've done 70 plus lyrical deconstructions, going line by line, analyzing the themes. And I don't think there are any two songs that we can point to as being like just outright repetitious of each other.
Yeah.
Where he's just doing, maybe the closest thing is Bring Me Down, as just being one-dimensional braggadocio. But other than that, he not only changes his musical production style up so much to have such diversity on just the album or just over the course of his discography, but his lyrical content continues to be diverse and growing and multifaceted to the point where it's absurd.
Yeah, no, I mean, and even on that, like, Bring Me Down, like, I remember, because I went out and bought, he did the, like, string arrangement thing, like, at the London Philharmonic or something, like, where he produced that, or he performed that album with, like, a, basically, like, a string quartet. I don't know if you remember that. I found, like, a bootleg CD of it.
Late Orchestration?
Yeah. And maybe, I guess, never mind. Cause I guess that's Late Registration. Never mind. See, dude, I don't know those two. I guess I got into them at the same time sort of, and I just blend them together all the time. But I think like, and so, but like on Bring Me Down, like the opening lines on there, like I loved it so much where he's like, we're going to mass today. We have to pray despite what the pastors say. I have to say like that since Pac passed away, most of these other people don't even deserve a beat from me or whatever that last thing is. And it was funny, like it was braggadocious. He was definitely bragging, and it was just more of a like, oh, you know, woe is me, I'm so brilliant sort of thing and misunderstood. But it was like even his version of it was just so amazing to me. For like that song was like stuck in my head for a really long time, because he was like, and especially with the string quartet, it was just amazing. Like the string quartet version of that song was like, yeah, dude, like people don't even deserve to have your alternate version of this song. like you're right. Like maybe it sucks that you're right, but you're right. You know, I mean? Like, So yeah, and that's where I think the distinction is like, for me, is like, there's a lot of, you know, and I like Drake, but it's like, when Drake says stuff like that, it's like, all right, man, like, I guess, you know, you do, you're a great rapper, and yeah, maybe you're better than a lot of other rappers or something. But like, for Kanye, it felt different. It was like this sort of creative genius thing. It felt sort of like Leonardo da Vinci saying that, you know, like, and not to like exaggerate too much, but it just felt like that. It felt like Michelangelo being like, nobody deserves a statue from me. And it's like, you look at his work and you're like, damn, it's kind of true. Like, you are just on a totally different level than a lot of other people in your generation. So yeah. Anyway, not to derail it, but that, when you mentioned that song, I was like, yeah, that really resonates even in that particular song. That's probably one of his more one-dimensional songs.
Yeah, that's, as you're saying that too, it just got me thinking, like, even then, he doesn't talk about that all that often. So even though it's a one-dimensional song, it's still unique in his discography. It's not like,
yeah,
he's saying throughout his discography, like, none of you deserve this from me. Like, he said it the one time and had a song focused on it and then went back to doing other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And yeah, that's true. If you listen to the discography, just music-wise, production-wise, of any other hip-hop artist today, who has that diversity that Kanye has?
Yeah, no one.
Mm-mm.
No, I mean, it's not, and it's not even close. And that's why, like, Kanye is the best. The guy who's our senior editor here at Vine and We Please, he and I've had a lot of conversations about this, and I remember he put it really well one time. He's like, Kanye is the best rap music maker of all time, and it's not close. Like, he may not be, you know, he may not be one of the founding fathers of rap, you know, like from a production perspective, like a Dr. Dre, who I love. But you just put him up as like a guy who makes rap music, and it is not close at all. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think there's a legitimate argument to be made that Kanye is not the best rap music maker of all time. I wouldn't say he's like the greatest rapper of all, like from a lyrical, from like a rap mechanics perspective. I wouldn't say necessarily that he's like the best rapper of all time. Like, that's probably Biggie Small. That's probably Notorious B.I.G. or Tupac. I don't know. But like, he's from like an MC rapper perspective, but from a musical perspective, and I mean, his lyrics are amazing. Like, I think he's super, super, super clever. And it's funny, because I still go back to some albums and or some songs, and it's like I pick up on something that just never clicked before, like what he was saying. You know what I mean? And I think, so from that perspective, I think like he's kind of untouchable in that area. And I think he's sort of, it's funny, because I was talking with someone the other day about the way that I've started to sort of quantify artists that I think will be sort of generationally great, is like kind of almost like on a secondary level, the amount that their work causes other rappers to sort of switch lane, or other musicians to kind of like adjust their course a little bit. And like, I think about, like, I was talking about that with like Kendrick Lamar, and it's like, look, Kendrick Lamar is just the best rapper right now. Like, it doesn't, like, a lot of people are like, well, no, there's this other guy that you've never heard of and whatever. And it's like, that's fine. Kendrick is still putting out the best rap albums right now. So like, from an MC perspective, there's just not, like, yeah, like J. Cole's, you know, people like J. Cole, or people like Big Sean, or people like, you know, like Drake or whatever. And Drake has, but it's like Drake shifted into pop music, right? And it's mm-hmm. like, nobody wants to fuck with Kanye. Nobody wants to try and do Kanye music better than Kanye, right? Like, and I think that that's like really telling. And it's the same reason, like, Drake's never going to go after Kendrick Lamar. Like, he's never going to drop a Kendrick Lamar diss track, because he knows what happens after that, right? Like, because he'll go after Meek Mill, because like Meek Mill is like, and I love Meek Mill, actually. I thought Wins and Losses was, it's one of my favorite rap albums of this year, but it's like, he'll go after Meek Mill because most of Drake's fans, like, or there's probably a big contingent of Drake's fans that like don't know Meek Mill's work very well. And so like, Drake dissing somebody who then most of the people, I think, are like, who's that? Which is sad. It seems like, oh man, Drake killed that dude. but Drake's never going to go after Pusha T. I mean, Pusha T went at Drake a while ago, and it's like, Drake never responded to him. Drake's never going to go after Kendrick Lamar, because what happens after that is that the one of those guys drops a diss track that's just obliterates Drake, because like from a rapper perspective, Drake's not close to like this like echelon. And I would say that Kendrick's getting to a point where he's like, he's getting close to being like as big as Drake. Like he's on his way, but it's like Drake is like kind of has this like pop icon status, right? Where like all of his songs have like a, you know, 600 million plays or something. and I think like it, there's like only certain, he always raps about going at people, and it's like, you're not really going at anybody. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're not really going at anybody who's like a legitimate threat to your career. But like somebody like Kendrick, like getting embarrassed on a public stage by somebody like Kendrick or Pusha T, which is what would happen, it, like that is a threat to his career, right? And like, so he's, it's just interesting how like as these artists rise, and then there's always just like Kanye's way over there somewhere. Like nobody's going to go after, nobody goes after Kanye. Like I mean, like Jay-Z did, because they you know, and I imagine that they'll eventually patch things up in one form or another. But like, they're age-old friends, right? And there's a lot there. And Jay-Z is bigger than, he's like even bigger than any of those guys. So like he can, like, but it's like, how many artists do you listen to who make fun of Kanye? Like, I can't remember the last time I heard a track that somebody went at Kanye. Like, the only, because, or go ahead.
Oh, the only one I can think of was the non-album release by J. Cole. False Prophets, where it could not have been about Kanye. Like, he wasn't bold enough to say like Kanye,
right? Totally.
Which, so a lot of people, Travis and I included, took it as a Kanye diss, but yeah, even then, like, not anything that Kanye even cares about.
Yeah, no, I think it's really meaningful and admirable that like no matter where Kanye is in the press at any given moment, like it's every artist's dream to work with him. Mm-hmm. Like if he calls you, the only answer is yes. I mean, like I remember when they interviewed Justin Vernon about My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, like what it was like working with Kanye and stuff, and he was like, so, you know, originally, I'm sure you know this, like originally Kanye was going to go up to Wisconsin because Justin Vernon was like, yeah, I'll work with you, but you got to come up here because I kind of don't like something, like he just didn't really want to go to Hawaii. And so Kanye was like, OK. And Kanye had a flight up there and it got canceled by because of a snowstorm. And so then Justin Vernon ended up out in Hawaii. But he was like, it was so hilarious. It was like, he's like, yeah, dude, I'm some fucking farm kid from Wisconsin, sharing a room, like a college dorm room sized room with Rick Ross, and he's like smoking the craziest weed that I've ever smoked. And it's like, how the fuck did I get here? Like, and but he was just like, but yeah, but I of course I had to work with Kanye. Like, and I just think there's not, there are probably other artists that people may just always want to work with, but like I just can't think of them right now. Like I can't think of someone that is pervasively respected in this generation of music as Kanye from like a creative and music production perspective. Like I just can't think of someone who comes up all the time in interviews the way that Kanye does with other artists.
Right, especially I feel like when he was earlier, and a lot of his contemporaries or elders were still the mainstream focus and attention, he may not have gotten brought up as much at that point. But now a lot of the people in the mainstream are 10, 15 years younger than Kanye, like artists in their
right
20s, like mid 20s. And they've all grown up like you and I have with Kanye to it's the point where it's like, now he's a little bit of the elder statesman. And of course everybody's like, yeah, I would love to work with Kanye.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, like Lord, for instance, or like even when there were those like it helped even it, like even someone as big as like Bieber, like it helped his image a lot just with those like pictures of him and Kanye leaving LA clubs together. You know what I mean? Like that was like, oh shit, okay,
It like those, gives some artistic clout.
Yeah, totally. It was like, oh, damn. And I think that Kanye worked on Bieber's last record or is working on the new one. I don't remember. I think it was the last one. I don't remember, though, on purpose or whatever that was, which I liked, actually. I thought it was I thought it was Bieber's best record. But he just, like, him putting his name on your work is, like, still probably the best endorsement that you can get in the music world.
Yeah, it makes me want to start being a musician just so I could, potentially be obscure and good enough that Kanye's like, hey, you, come here.
Yeah, totally.
Me?
Totally, man.
Me? Obviously, yeah, this podcast isn't working. I got to do something else to get his attention.
Yeah, man. You got to drop it. You got to drop some crazy album that only, 1,500 people like. And yeah. You'll get an email from his secretary.
Would that be the day?
That would be the day.
So were you, you had said that when 808s came out, you weren't necessarily, it took a while to connect with it and get it. Did you have the same issue with My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy or Yeezus or Life of Pablo?
No, I mean, so when My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy dropped, which it's ironic now, because I was following him. I was on Twitter at that point, I think. I think it was on Twitter that he was posting all that stuff. But when he was doing the Good Fridays drop, every Friday I downloaded whatever the track was and listened to it a bazillion times. and I remember when My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy dropped, I remember the day I was living in, been like waiting forever. And I was living in Raleigh, North Carolina after college for a year. And I lived next to this Target that was in a mall. And I remember it was pouring rain. I got off work. I went over there and picked it up because I had seen it, watched. It was crazy because I got my roommate to, I told my roommate Adam, who I'd gone to college with, I was like, listen, man, Kanye's got a new album coming out. It's going to be unbelievable. And so I coerced him to stay up and watch that Saturday Night Live performance. And I was shell-shocked by it. And my roommate was like, man, that sucked. And I was like, dude, you have got to be fucking kidding me, man. It was pouring rain. I went to this Target in the mall. I bought the CD because it had the four different covers in the CD or whatever. You could fold it in different ways and it had different album art depending on how you folded it. And I remember I drove around in the rain smoking cigarettes, blasting that. And then went home and put it on the sound system that we had at our apartment and blasted it for basically the rest of my life. I did it, the girl actually that introduced me to 808s and Heartbreak, we ended up dating for a year and a half. And I remember she was she was interning at the Senate, for a senator or something in DC. And I remember that summer I played that album so much, and it had been out for about a year at that point or a little less, and I played that album so much that just like my friend Meredith in college, she was just like, we are not listening to that fucking album again. And I was like, just one more time, I just want to hear, just and I would always rap lines to her, and it was she liked it for a while, and then I think was legitimately upset. Just shut the fuck up.
It's if I have to pick right now between you and the album,
it's the album. Yeezus took me, I think Yeezus took me a little while. I didn't really, and it did what it was supposed to do, which was it was supposed to kind of shock you, right? I mean, and I think he talked about even how he always opens his albums with some kind of pretty song. And he didn't do that on that. And I just remember listening to him being like, what the hell is this? And then it took about a month. I kept listening to it for a couple weeks, and then it really clicked. And I saw him at Governor's Ball. I think it was, I think that might've been the first time that I heard Black Skinheads. I don't remember. I think he played Governor's Ball in 2013. I think it was 2013, either right after or right before that album dropped. And I remember he came out And I think he opened with Black Skinheads, and he had these crazy videos up, and I was just like, I have no concept for what's going on, but I really like it, but I don't get it. Like, and so, but that's, I mean, Yeezus is man, I don't know. It's hard, but Yeezus is maybe my favorite Kanye album. It's in the top three for sure. Like my top three from him just rearrange each other all the time.
Right.
As far as order, but yeah. And then Life of Pablo, when I went to the theater, I remember like, I loved it, but I remember there were certain tracks that just, I didn't really click with, or I just didn't see, I didn't feel like I liked a lot. And then, it's funny because Andrew, our senior editor, actually like had this conversation about how he's like, every time Kanye drops an album, everyone's like, this is going to be the one that sucks. And he's like, he never listens to a Kanye album until Kanye's like, this is the album. Right. And then like with Life of Pablo, like this is the album, it's out. And he's like, he never listens to, and I started doing this too. Like we never listen to leaked tracks or anything. It's like, if Kanye doesn't want it out in the world, then it's not ready yet. And yeah. So I don't want to hear it until he says that it's ready. But I remember, I kind of waited a bit cause he put that album out, but then I was supposed to get like an email with a download for it. And that took forever to show up. like, I think I didn't even get it till like 4 months after the album was out.
Yeah.
But then he kept tweaking it and like adding songs and rearranging it and whatever. And like, I remember I think like a couple different versions of Wolves came out, like at different times. And anyway, so I just waited. And then when he was like, all right, this is the album, I listened to it and I loved it. I mean, it's like the only reason that I don't think that that's my favorite Kanye record is just because I think it's kind of like a Megatron of all of his styles, like his entire career. It's like he put out like a greatest hits album with all new songs. and so I think like for me, it exists more. And I think there's a ton of important narrative stuff and like meat on the bones there for that album. But it's also, I always see it like slightly below Yeezus and My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, just because those albums seem like this unbelievably like rich and complex, like singular thing. Where like Life of Pablo for me feels like it's a few different things that are incredible, but it's just different. Those other ones seem like a tiny bit like tighter, mm-hmm. or something. So anyway,
I can see that. They're definitely I think it's weird to compare it to Dragon Ball Z, but I always think about it.
I love Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, perfect then, because they always talk about like when you go Super Saiyan, there's like power leakage.
Right.
And it's hard to contain the energy. And I feel that's mm-hmm. almost what's going on with Life of Pablo, is that there's so much going on that it just kind of spills out in different places. It's kind of like the mm-hmm. sun having solar flares.
Dude, that's an amazing comparison to Dragon Ball Z. That's, yes, I love that. First of all, I love that you made that comparison, and it's totally true. It's like, and that's where, you know, it's funny in Dragon Ball Z how it's like, and I remember when I was first watching it, like you never, it's like, it, they just kept adding on levels of Super Saiyan-ness, you know, where it was like, I remember like, you know, I would geek about it because I was watching it in the States on like Cartoon Network every day at like 3:30 or something.
And yeah.
When I was in like high school or middle school, both, I think, I remember in high school, I used to, during class, I would draw Dragon Ball Z pictures. But anyway,
yeah.
It was funny because I would just look up like how, and I would see all these pictures from like, because the show, you know, like much later version, like seasons of the show or versions of the show were out like in Japan. And I would see these pictures of like Goku with like, looked crazy. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell that is. Like, I've never seen him look like that in this show. And it's funny because I think it does really fit nicely with like, with Kanye's career, in the sense you're just like, oh shit, I guess he can do this too. Like, all right. Well, that's wild. But, yeah. And I think that's I love that. Anyway, we should do another show just on Dragon Ball Z. I fucking love that show.
I talked with Travis about doing like a short, like how cool it would be to do little like 1 to 4 episode podcasts that are about
Dragon Ball Z. Yeah, I think that'd be amazing. I've actually been meaning to go back and watch all of it again because there's like a lot. Because I have like a Funimation subscription. It's like $5 a month or something. You can watch all Funimation shows ever on their website. I was watching. I'm almost done with Cowboy Bebop, and I think I'm just going to go back through Dragon Ball Z. But the problem with Dragon Ball Z is like every episode something almost happens, basically. Yeah. Like, and then it's over. So it's like there's like 75,000 episodes of it because it took them fucking forever to just have something happen in that show.
Like, it was one of the most dramatic and frustrating things every week as a child. Just going through and you're like, oh, something's going to happen. And then it's Friday and you're like, nothing happened.
Yeah, I know, man. I know. It's anyway.
Have you heard about Dragon Ball Z Kai?
I have not. Maybe I have. I don't know. Is it a game or is it a show?
The show. They actually went through and edited all the filler out of the show and reduced the episode count. Wow. So it's something to where, like, the Cell Saga, instead of being, like, 77 episodes, is just 40.
Oh, yes.
Like, that level.
Well, I know what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, you get through Cell in, like, 97 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, where yes, God.
I think they killed Frieza at, like, episode 110 in the in the American thing, so.
Yeah, at least.
So you got to definitely watch Kai. It goes much faster and has that pace. Well, for Kanye stuff, what then would be your favorite Kanye moment?
Let me think. I was thinking about that last night and I was like, man, I'll answer, but I think my guess is, like, if I was asked this four or five times, I probably would have four or five different answers. Man. Yeah, I think I think probably from like a personal, so like I think from like a cultural level, right now my favorite one is his interview with, it was like the TMZ video of him telling the guy, the reporter, to not talk to him. And I just watched it again the other day. It's just so funny to me and so like amazing. Cause he's like gets really angry, but it's just incredible. He's like, don't talk to me. And then he's like, stops. And he's like, don't talk to me. Don't say anything. Don't talk to anyone I know. Don't talk to anyone ever. Don't even talk to yourself, and don't talk to anyone anywhere. And like, just goes off. And for some reason that is just such an amazing, like, thing for me. I've been laughing about it for years, and I will always be laughing about it. I think, like, from like a seeing him in concert perspective, I think my favorite was when he played the Don't Like remix in Chicago.
Oh.
And like he just rapped his verse, and like the entire like United Center was, I mean, it was filled to the brim, and it was like, I thought the building was going to collapse. Like, he had this kind of like the stage that he had, it kind of went into this triangle that could like raise up and down and whatever. But he was like jumping in the stage. It looked like he was almost on like a sort of a very bad trampoline. You know, he wasn't jumping up in the air really high, but it was just like almost like that same action. And he was just losing his shit and the whole place was going nuts. And it was like probably my favorite music moment, like live music moment ever. Like, it just, there was more energy in that song and that stadium than like I've ever experienced at any show ever. So those are, I know that's probably cheating a little bit, but I think right now those are my two favorite.
No, it feels almost unfair to ask just for one moment. So I'm glad you went with two.
Yes. Yeah, man.
What about a favorite album? What's that? You were saying Yeezus earlier that it might be Yeezus, but it changes between Yeezus and what other two?
I think My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is my favorite. I mean, I think, like, if I had to pick, like, if somebody, like, held a gun to my head and was like, you have to pick one song of his, and that's the only one that you can ever hear again, it's probably Devil in a New Dress. That sample on there is like, that's like probably my favorite rap song ever. Mm. There's something about the sample on that like never has ever gotten old to me. So yeah, I would say that album. I mean, I think like, and that album is like, I was just in a very particular place in my life at the time. And that sort of, that album was like kind of a retreat for me. And I just obsessed over it. And it's funny now because I'm friends with Nate, this guy Nate, who was Kanye's manager during that sort of 2-year window. And Nate came up with like the Good Fridays drops and stuff like that. And I like that, that was like the Good Fridays stuff. And then that album was like, that's my favorite time personally in music ever.
Yeah.
Like that was, I've never been more excited about an album or a release before as I was then, like before or since.
How strongly did you hug Nate when he told you that?
Yeah, I did. I'd known him for a while, and I didn't know that. I knew he was Kanye's manager. I didn't know he had come up with Good Fridays, and I like freaked out. Like, I think we were like at a sports bar watching like a Cleveland Indians game.
Yes.
He's from Cleveland, and
I love Nate. What the fuck?
Yeah. He's a lovable dude. But I think he told me that when we were watching like a Cleveland Indians game or something. And I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. I was like, dude, that is the best thing that anyone has ever done ever, like in modern music. I can't. And I just like, so it's like, he and I are buds. I don't like fan out around him. But when I found that out, I turned into a fanboy, like immediately. Like, I was like, I'm sorry, man. I don't have enough self-restraint to not freak out about that right now.
That's one of those things where like almost every hip hop fan and definitely every Kanye fan has that memory of what was it like in your life when Good Fridays were coming out and just that excitement every single mm-hmm. Friday.
Mm-hmm.
That was a special
time.
No,
I mean, like I remember for like years, because like, I think it's on the, like that Beyonce remix of, No, it wasn't the remix. It was like he did put out this song with Beyonce and Charlie Wilson.
The See Me Now.
Yeah, and I like he like yells like Rosewood at one point in that song, and so for like years, whenever I would get excited as like a joke, I'd be like Rosewood, and like nobody knew what the hell I was saying, I remember like I listened to that on like that was all I was like listening to at the time. I think I was, well, before the album dropped, I think I was listening to that No Ceilings mixtape from Lil Wayne. I had like found a bootleg copy of it somewhere and like on CD, and I remember I loved that album, and then like this stuff started coming out, and I was like, I just can't listen to No Ceilings anymore right now. Like, like I love you, Lil Wayne, and you are the best rapper on the planet right now, but this album's more important.
Right? Like, so, have you heard this song called Monster?
Mm-hmm. Dude, yeah, and I remember, like, not really... I mean, like, Kanye... The thing I loved about that is, like... That's the only time that I can think of that Kanye... Both, like, Kanye got bodied on a song. Like, somebody was just, like, blew his verse out of the water, right? Because, like, on Watch the Throne, and I know this must exist. There must be, Kanye has to have a version of Watch the Throne that's only him. It must be out there somewhere. Like, there's no way. There's just not, Kanye's too full of himself not to have that. And I would love to hear it. But I think, like, yeah, it was like Nicki Minaj just blew him and Jay-Z up on that track. And I had no idea who she was. I don't think most people didn't. But I remember going back and being like, I can't believe this is happening right now. Like Nicki Minaj, this is like an all-time rap verse. And I stand by that. I think Nicki's verse on Monster is like an all-time, like it's in the pantheon of guest verses for sure.
Yeah, to the point where I don't think her... maybe that's unfair to her to say, but I don't know if her career looks the same without that verse.
I agree. No, dude, I totally agree with you. And I think, like, I like her a lot. And I'm you know, I had hoped that... because she put out that Chirac song with... who's now G Herbo. He was a Lil Herb at the time. And she put out that track, and I was like, this is crazy. And it was like drill music. It was like her on like a drill beat. And it was like, I want an album of this. Like, this is my favorite, like kind of like the kind of gritty Nicki Minaj stuff. And I'm really proud of her because she's, you know, she became like a pop icon and did her thing and has made a ton of money. And but I've still am waiting sort of in the background of like, I love you, Nicki Minaj. I like your work. I don't listen to a lot of her albums. Like, I don't listen to them very much, like very often. But I really like her a lot. And I feel like in my mind, she has been the best female rapper since she came on the scene. But I think a lot of the times I think that because there's a lot of great female rappers, but it's like in the back of my mind, it's like none of them have done anything that's like, this monster verse. Like, nobody's gotten close to putting out something like that. And so she still is like at the top of the pile for me, literally, I think primarily because of that verse.
Right. You know that she's capable of busting that out and just waiting. Like, when is going to be the project where she goes back and is just like, yep, this is what I'm bringing.
Yeah, totally. And I think like, I think another like, and I would say that like when Azealia Banks first came out, who like, I feel really bad for Azealia Banks. And I feel like, I still think she has it in her to be like a generational rapper, like recognized as that. When she first came out, I was like, I can't remember the name of that song. But
Black Widow or?
No, it was like, I keep wanting to say 808s, and it's not that, but it's like a number. Anyway, sorry, I can't. Anyway, I heard that and I was like, oh shit, this girl's like gonna be like, she could hit, she could definitely hit she could definitely hit like Nicki Minaj levels at some point. And I feel like I think it was messed up that RZA basically lied to the press about her. And anyway, I feel bad for her, and I hope that something good comes out of this for her. But anyway, this is not about Azealia Banks. So anyway, but yeah, I think another reason, you know, like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, I remember like I was listening to it a lot. I moved out to Chicago, and actually that girl that I'd been dating who hated how much I played this album, like I moved out there to be with her. She broke up with me, and like, I didn't know hardly anyone in the city. And so like, I would just go home to this apartment that I was renting and smoke weed and listen to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Like, that's all I did for like too long, probably too long. But like, I remember there's this line, and we like a year later, we had started Vinyl Me Please, like almost literally to the like January 1st, 2013. And like, I go back to that album a lot because like, as we, you know, as Vinyl Me Please has grown and become this, like, I mean, thanks to our team and a lot of other things, it's become like a really like influential and big music company now. And that opening line on that album of like, I used to dream about this back in Chicago, mercy, mercy me, that mercy Alago, like, that's me the first year that I blow, how you say broken Spanish, no, I know every word probably to every song on that album, but like, I'd go back to that line a lot because it's just very like nostalgic, and seems, it's like the most probably literally relatable line for me that Kanye has ever, or one of them that Kanye has ever put out. It just like, there's been like so much that's happened since that time, and I like that line is a very special, that song and that line has like a very special place in my heart. So
that must have been it must be so strange thinking about when you're hearing that line, not in Chicago, and yep. it just kind of has no meaning to your life. And then when you know that you're going to Chicago, you get to Chicago, and the worst happen, like the worst situation that could happen in Chicago happens.
Right.
And you're just kind of left.
Well, it's not the worst, but it's close. Like it could have, someone could have lit me on fire or something. Like, I mean, technically, like I'm sure it could have gotten worse. At the time, it felt like it could not be worse. But yeah, but keep going. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. Perspective. That is a good thing to
yes.
have.
Yeah.
It just, and then the line takes on new meaning because at that point it's like now you are in Chicago and are mm-hmm. thinking about what's next and the dreams and what is your future going to be. So then the line has this entirely different meaning than what it just had when you moved there and what you were hearing before you moved there. And then when everything with Vinyl Me Please starts up, it must have just been motivating. And then now just such a weird nostalgic trip.
Yeah, no, and that's something I think, yeah, and that's why one of the reasons that I think I love Kanye so much is like on some level his music has like always been like sort of a almost emotional support at different really difficult times in my life. And my 20s have been a mess. I mean, there's a lot of like really difficult things have happened during over the last like 8 years or so, and I think like he's always been somebody that like his music has always been like really motivating. I think that motivating is a good term for it. And also I think very like supportive, you know, I mean, it's like, I understand, you know, Kanye's from like Chicago and everything, but he was kind of like a suburban kid, you know, like he grew up in a slightly different context, I think, than like he raps about, like, I think he lived on the west side of Chicago in the suburbs at least for a long time, and I he was this weird guy that like nobody really understood for a long time. Like, I mean, I've gone back and watched, like, I remember I've gone back and watched like videos of him when he would go on like the Poetry Slam stuff, and it would be like, I think like Mos Def was hosting one of them or something, but like, and here was this dude in a like a fucking pink polo and a backpack, and you're like, what the hell is this? Like, he looks like I remember it was like he was wearing like Lacoste shit, and it was like, man, I like my like college buddies wear that, you know what I mean? Like, he just had this aesthetic that was like, and he just didn't care. I remember Common saying one time that the big difference between like him and Kanye was like when College Dropout came out, like they had a listening party with all the a bunch of music writers, like journalists and stuff, and in this conference room. And he was like, Common was like, when I do that, like when I put out an album and I have that, I have these listening parties, I just sit quietly in the corner. I don't want to talk about the album. And I just want people to like it, you know, like I really hope they like it. And I don't really say anything. He's like, when College Dropout came out, like Kanye was like standing on the tape. He stood on the conference table for the entire thing and rapped every word to every song to every like the whole time, and was like, yo, this is good shit, this is classic shit and stuff like that, you know, like and I think I've always really struggled with like just confidence and self-esteem, and like it was like massively had like a very long struggle with like depression, and it was like pretty bad. And I think like in the back of my mind, I think there's something in me that was just sitting there that like waiting or something that like really resonated with how brash he was and how brash he was about his insecurities. Mm. And like he would rap about him. He would rap about being in bad credit card debt. He would rap about like being materialistic. He would rap about like being insecure about like relationships. And he would rap about his mom and like, in this way that was just like, I love my mom. And I wrote some songs that are just like, I love my mom. And I think like that was, there was like an honesty to him, and there still is, whether people like it or not all the time. Like there's an honesty to him and an almost like a soft heartedness, you know, like there's like a willingness. I mean, there's like a genuine soft heartedness to him that I know he shows more of it sometimes than others. Like, but it's like when he put out Only One, and I love that song.
Yeah.
And I remember I just remember a bunch of nights like tearing up to that, like sitting on my porch listening to it and just being like, man, like this guy can go out and, you know, tear a stadium down with these huge sort of maximalist beats, like and aggressive as shit. And he can also sit here and like rap about like, you know, rap a song from like his mother's perspective, who's dead. And it's like just really genuinely poignant. And I think like, I don't know, man. I mean, it's weird. It's like, we grow up and we have all these like different aspirations or whatever, or like versions of ourselves that we think could possibly be true. And then they sort of like exist in our heads. Right. And we feel like, and we all have different versions of ourselves, right? There's like a version of us of at least most people that's like kind of brazen. Maybe we don't say it, but we feel it, mm-hmm. right? Like I don't give a fuck. And most people just don't live that way, but you kind of feel it. And then I think everybody kind of has like this tender like place in them that is very like emotional and soft-hearted and vulnerable. And I think like he, for me, has always given, that's when I find his music, the reason I find his music so relatable is because I feel like he is like a thoroughly honest and thoroughly expressive version of like what my emotions or my like the way that he sort of embodies all these different things like makes so much sense to me. And I think like it's really helpful for me to have somebody like him as an artist who like, I don't know, it's like sort of almost operates as like a, almost like a big brother, you know, like I don't mm-hmm. have siblings, but I have a couple people in my life who are very close friends who like are almost like a big brother to me. One of them is actually, it's funny, at the Christmas party, I mean, we were all drunk, but I was telling Hessler, who's our head of marketing, he's 40 and he's like the coolest person that I know. And he's just an incredible dude. And I was like, hey man, like I don't really have a brother, but I kind of like, you kind of are my big brother, man. Like we, you know, it's just like something you say when you're drunk at a Christmas party, but I meant that. And I think like for me, you know, I've never, it's always been hard for me to find, or I've never, I think like one of the things when you're not really sure about, like you're not really totally always confident of like, this is who I am or who I want to be or whatever. And I think Kanye's always operated in the back of my mind as like, I want to be like that guy. Like I know that I'm not like I want to rap or not like, I necessarily want to like make my own clothing line or like, I want to like drunkenly explode at the VMAs. Although I wish I had, I think that would be amazing. But there's just something about him that I've just like, man, his like energy, like his creative energy and sort of willfulness, and the fact that he raps about the fact that he basically acts brazen and reckless as a way sometimes to like cover up his insecurities or things that he's scared about. And I think like there's not an artist that there's no other like musician or artist that I look at and feel so thoroughly like I want to be like that guy, kind of like I want to just follow that dude around. as like, man, just be my big brother, dude. Like I'll just because like it's, the funny thing is like I have friends who have big brothers, and it's funny like how growing up, like the big brothers were always like, they always seemed like cool, or like older sisters, they always seemed like cool and sort of like together. And like they kind of like had this sort of stability that when I was a kid, I could just be like, man, goddamn, I wish I had that, right? Like I wish I was cool like that person. And I think like, obviously you get older and realize that nobody has it together and whatever. But I think for me, he's always like existed like that, as like somebody like, oh, there are people out there in the world that are like me in some ways, even though I haven't done like 1/100th of the shit that he's done yet. But I mean, I will, but I just haven't done it yet. But I think like, that's like, anyway, I don't mean to ramble about all that. That's just, I think for me, that's why when people don't like him, that's why sometimes in the past I've been trying to get less defensive.
I know the feeling. I had my first,
it was like a Christmas party the other day, and that was the first time in like maybe like a year that I had like defended him to that degree. But it just feels like someone's talking shit about a family member, and it's like, for me, and that's
here.
It's like, all right, man, you can't say that. Like, I can, like, family can say that about family, but you can't say that. You know, I'm not Kanye's family. I just mean, like, it's just funny. Like, I look up to him so much that, like, when he fucks stuff up or is an idiot, I'm like, ah, man, I probably shouldn't have done that, but it's all right.
I got you.
I'm
still there for you. Well, and I think everything you're saying is, like, a key thing, because so much of growing up, we're around people... We're around other kids and other people that aren't really sure of how to be, and influenced by a very small group of adults. And if you don't have somebody that's necessarily telling you it's okay to be the most confident version of yourself, it's okay to be the most, maybe not the most brazen version of yourself, but to embrace your goals and dreams and to put in the time and effort to do something. Rather, so many people are telling you to be cautious, not to do this, to watch how you're going, that to have somebody who is, as you said, be so honest and authentic in their art, but also in how they embrace celebrity
and
go about their life. When you don't have that in your own life and you're questioning whether you're allowed to be that person, that can be very, very important and meaningful.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think for like most of my life, I was like depressed and insecure to a point where I feel like I was almost constantly apologizing that I even existed or something, right? Like there's just no, this is like massive deficit, which is, we don't need to get into this, is, you're not my therapist, but I think like, I don't want to make you act like my therapist. That's not the point of this. But I think like that is, I totally agree. And I think, you know, growing up, if I went back, I would imagine like there's a much more nuanced take on this. But I think like one of my frustrations, one of my frustrations about just my childhood was like, I think growing up very conservative, it was like you're always like apologizing to people and you're always like insecure about different stuff, and it was like everybody, like even God is unsure about you, right? And you're like, holy shit. And like but I think I can remember my parents at different times, like they always like had a lot of faith in me and were crazy supportive of me. But I think, you know, there was an element of it that like there was so much other noise that didn't cut through to me very well. And like, I didn't have anybody in my life that was like, sort of, to your point, like sort of brazen in a good way, like kind of very confident and just like self-assertive in a good way. And so as I've grown up, I've always like really admired people that are like that. Cause I know that it's not as thorough as it seems, because everybody has fears and insecurities and whatever, and demons and stuff. But I think like I've been working, you know, probably just over the last 6 months or so, probably, or a year, to like start being more that way. And like putting myself out there more, because I think that he's kind of a blueprint for that, especially because it's like, yeah, like when you do that, you make mistakes. Like you say dumb stuff, you do dumb stuff, like people make fun of you sometimes, whatever, but that's kind of what life is. And I think for me, there was always this like hesitancy to like avoid pain on some level, probably like on the core creaturely level. It was like, I don't want people to make fun of me, or I don't want to fail, or I don't want to be an idiot in front of everybody. And it's like, the thing that blows but is good is that, like, that's the only way to do anything. Like, is that anything that you do, there's going to be plenty of people who don't like it, who don't like you, who, like, are vocal about that. And that just is the way that people are. That's how life is. And that may suck, but it's not going to change, right? Like, there's no amount of, like, there's no amount of back porch conversations with people that's going to change the way that the world is. That sucks, but it's just true. Like, that's just how it's always going to be.
Yeah. So, every person that's in the public eye that puts something out in the world is going to have detractors. And
totally.
Coming to terms with that is not an easy thing to do. And you can even come to terms with that on a small scale, but then getting used to it on a large scale has to be something completely different.
Anyway, man, I could talk about this forever, but I know we've already been going for a long time. So,
yeah. Well, what about a top five Kanye tracks?
Okay. Yeah. I'm In It.
Nice.
From Yeezus. And it's probably I know I said earlier that. So Devil in a New Dress, I don't know how to arrange them right now, but the top five are, like, Devil in a New Dress, I'm In It. I'm In It is, like, the hardest song I've ever heard. Like, I don't think I've ever heard any music that goes as hard as that does for me. And then, Real Friends, for sure.
Another strong choice.
Yeah. Probably, Family Business.
Nice.
For sure. Family Business. That could be my favorite. I don't know, man. And then a fourth one, maybe, like Everything I Am. I love that. I mean, I think that concept of, like, everything I'm not made me everything I am sort of thing is, like, that resonates a lot with me.
Yeah, especially with everything we were just talking about, that song is really an anthem for that.
Yeah, it is. I think it's sometimes there's a quick road to that, sometimes a slow one, as far as, like, starting to appreciate that in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand what you are not and what you are, you know? And so I think, like, I don't know. I've gone back to that song maybe the most, only because I think most of my 20s has just been me face planning over and over again. And that's been, you know, maybe it didn't need to be as difficult as it was, but I think, that sentiment is maybe the, like, the crux of what I appreciate about him as an artist, is, like, just living that, you know? And I think that's, like, for me, that's like the nucleus that everything, all of his other work, like, orbits around. And for me, those are my five. What about you? And sorry, I've been wanting to just hear your answers to all these, but my guess is that you've answered all these things a bazillion times, and it's kind of, like, boring. I'm not boring, but I would imagine it's just, like, you probably have, like, answered the same stuff most shows.
I'm an only child, so I get very excited anytime I get to talk. So
yeah,
if there's an opportunity to answer my top five, I go Wolves, Real Friends, Blame Game, Blood on the Leaves, and I think Hell of a Life.
Wow. Man, those are great. Damn. That's a great list, dude.
Thanks. Thanks.
That's a hell of a list.
It gets a little dark in there, but I don't know, I guess I've always liked more of the gothic melodramatic.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Same. I mean,
well, and, I guess any final Kanye words that you'd like to share?
No, I think I've talked too much already. I think the only thing that I would say is, like, I think that whether or not people, identify or like connect with him as much as you and I do. I think it's important for people to have somebody like that, that they like look up to, whether it's creatively or whatever, like to the level that we both clearly do. Because I think, like, I don't know, life is crazy, dude. There's like just a bunch of weird shit that happened. I remember there's this Frederick Buechner quote about how, like, I think it's like, this is the world, like, wonderful and terrible things will happen. Do not be afraid. Mm. And I think, like, for me, one of the stabilizing forces for me in the midst of all sorts of different stuff is, like, there are these people out there that I really want to be like, or that I really look up to. And I think it's helpful, especially maybe as like the guy who works in creative stuff a lot. It's like, if it's not Kanye for you, that's whoever listening or whatever. Like, it doesn't have to be, but I think everybody needs somebody like that, because I think underneath all the shit that's like kind of dumb about celebrities and whatever, there is something true, or there is something helpful in having like heroes. And like, and I think that gets lost sometimes. Like, I think the concept of like, I don't know, the concept that I think, especially in a digital age, I think there is a, no matter what everybody might quote about how no man is an island or whatever, I think sometimes one of my frustrations, I think, with technology in general and how pervasive it is that it sort of subtly makes you start to believe that either you are in either in a good or a bad way, depending on how your psyche takes that. And I think for me, like, the concept of having personal heroes and just like geeking out and like nerding out over their work and whatever is like a really important counterbalance to, I think, a lot of the like ways that technology can make us feel very isolated. And make you realize, like, man, there are people out here who have wanted to do similar stuff to you, and they did it, and they did it really well, and they worked really hard, and you can do the same thing, you know? Like, it's such a dad getting, like, dad at a little league game sort of thing to say. But yeah, I mean, like, when I was a kid, it was baseball players, and then it was, you know, whatever. It was like always, but I've always had someone or some group of people that like I was like, man, I just want to grow up and be like that. And it's probably partially because I was an only child. Like, I didn't have a reference point close to home of like, this is exactly who I want to be like. Right. And so like, I've always had to sort of outsource that. And yeah. And I just think that's an important gap to fill for everybody, however they do it. And I think for me, at least, that's, you know, Kanye's music, but you know, everybody's different. So